welcome everyone to the table. My name is Debbie Manning. I'm one of the pastors here. It's good to be with you as that sun shines through the windows, and we get used to cold weather again. We got a little bit spoiled. Hey, happy St. Patrick's Day. I've got green on, a little nod to the little bit of Irish in me. I don't know about you guys. My husband has a lot of bit of Irish. Manning comes from Mannion, somewhere in Ireland. And I don't know if you guys have traditions for St. Patrick's Day, but we always have. Had. And our tradition is, Patty, if you throw that up there, Irish soda bread. So my husband grew up with his mom making Irish soda bread. He brought that in as a tradition to our family as we grew up. And you know what he did? He expanded that tradition. So every Easter we get it, but with pink and purple sprinkles. And then at Christmas he does it, and we get red and green sprinkles. And when we were raising our kids, and we lived in this neighborhood of about 34 homes, he started this thing where every Christmas Eve he'd make a loaf of Irish soda bread for each neighbor, and he'd deliver it to their home. And he did that for about 15 years until we moved away. Of course, Steve Manning would do that. And about, oh gosh, well, I guess it was about a year ago, we were at a wedding of an old neighbor's daughter. And there we are at the reception, and we're standing at a high top. And two young women, sisters, who grew up in that neighborhood, so you could hear them, they're starting to walk this way. And the first one, her name's Abby, and she's hiking up like this, and Aaron's behind her going, "Abby, you can't do this. Abby, you can't do this." And she goes, "I sure am going to do it." And she walks right up to us, slams her hands, and says, "Mr. Manning, I mean Steve, what does it take to get back on your Irish soda bread list?" And of course, you know, we're all chuckling about it. And of course, Steve, this past Christmas, made some Irish soda bread and drove it out to Minnetonka to Abby and Aaron's house. But what I love so much about that story is it's not really a story about bread, is it? I mean, that Irish soda bread's pretty good with a cup of coffee. But I don't think it was because it tasted so good. I think it was bigger than the bread. I think it was even bigger than the tradition. It had to do with maybe feeling loved, feeling seen, feeling known. And tonight we're talking about bread. We'll add a couple fish to it, and we're talking about bread. We're talking about the feeding of the 5,000, which again is a story that's bigger than bread and the fish. It goes far beyond that. But we continue on in the book of Mark. You've been hearing for months about all the hard work that Jesus and the disciples are doing, you know, roaming all over to the villages and casting out demons and healing people and doing all sorts of miraculous things and teaching and preaching. And about 2 weeks, and they're tired. Mark tells us they are tired. They have had no rest, no food, or little food, I should say. And about 2 weeks ago, I talked about how Jesus started to expand his mission. And he sent the disciples out two by two on their own. He empowered them with the Spirit, and they went out to do some of that healing and casting out demons and all those things. And this week, they return from their mission. Now, interesting that sandwiched in between that, and Katie talked about this last week, was the beheading of John the Baptist. But think about this, you guys. Not only do they return exhausted after their journey, but they're also grieving. They're grieving a loss. So this is how they return, and Jesus invites them back into a time of rest and recuperation. Here we go. Mark 6, 30. The apostles gathered around Jesus and told them all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while." For many were coming and going. They had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a deserted place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they hurried there on foot from all over all the towns and arrived ahead of them. And as he went on shore, he saw a great crowd. And he had compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. I'm going to pause for a second. We're just four verses into a 14-verse text tonight. I think it's important to just, after the rigors of this mission, Jesus knows, like, these guys need to rest. So this needed retreat to just get away from the constant pressures of ministry is unexpectedly flipped on its head, because as they come around in their boat, they are surrounded by needy people that run up to them
and their plans after a grueling missionary journey. Their plans are interrupted. Now, plans interrupted, I think we can all relate to, right? Because we live in the tension of our plans and our interruptions, of expectations and the unexpected. It happens all the time in our lives. And I was thinking a lot about this and this idea that I think it's really important for us. It's hard when we're asked to shift gears and change our mindset and change what we're doing. But I think it's important for us to actually accept and expect, because that is life. And the amazing thing is that that's often when God, I think, when we experience God in the most powerful ways. And we can look at Jesus, who he doesn't turn his boat around away from the crowd. He doesn't head back. He doesn't dismiss them. He doesn't ignore them. He doesn't blame them. He doesn't complain. Instead, Jesus is present. He's present to what is right in front of him. And the text is clear that he had compassion for them. Now, a lot of the texts I was reading this week and the study and the scholars said compassion, the way we understand it, doesn't really do it justice. And that's because the Greek word, splanchnizomo, actually means churning of the gut. I mean, think about that. Churning of the gut, what makes your stomach hurt? And Jesus is churning on the inside as he sees this crowd that he says we're like sheep without a shepherd. Now, when I read the text, I always read it several times through before I start studying it. The question that came to me that hadn't, because we know many of us are familiar with this text, was why? Like, why were all the people running on foot from every town? Like, why were they chasing after him? I had this visual of those videos of, or film probably, of all the people surrounding the Beatles. Like, why was it that they were running after Jesus like that? Was it because they're hungry? Probably not, because they couldn't have known what was going to happen. Was it because they heard about, like, all the miracles and all the healing and the amazing teaching, or maybe they even experienced it? Maybe. But they did not get, if that's true, they didn't get what they were expecting that day. And I think more likely, they were looking for something that they needed and they didn't even know that they needed it. And I don't know about you guys, but I think that happens to all of us a lot. Sometimes we're looking for something, we can't even name what we need, but I think Jesus saw it. And I think that Jesus saying they were like sheep without a shepherd is the answer to that question of why. Why were they running? Think about it. Sheep and faithless shepherds. Shepherds that are distracted by idols. Shepherds that don't provide for the care and the well-being of their sheep. Sheep with exploitive shepherds. Those that use sheep for their own gain. Jesus is confronted by a group of people who were sheep without a shepherd. I mean, they were people whose leaders were Herod, the Pharisees, people that weren't focused on the common good for everyone, but on their own agenda. These were people that were living in the margins, people that were oppressed. These were the people who chased after Jesus. I was thinking a lot about the suffering and the deep wounds that people have had when they're exposed to or at the hands of shepherds like this. I think we have people here. I think there are people in the pews all over this country that have had faithless, exploitive shepherds. And many won't ever trust a shepherd again. I think we have many people who've left the church completely would never dream to come back and trust a shepherd after their painful, painful experience. And we know those stories, right? There are many that came to mind for me. One in particular, but dear friend Matt Moran, he tells this story. He actually told it in a group we asked him to talk to. He grew up in the faith. Just a strong faith in Jesus, just a loving, compassionate person. He came out as a young adult was kicked out of the church that he had grown up in. And for years, he and his partner wandered around trying to find a church that followed Jesus that would embrace and love them and make them allow them to be part of their community. And they were living in Milwaukee at the time, and they found this amazing church, like doing really good work in the city. Like, they went for several weeks, and they felt welcomed and loved, and they were so excited. I can remember him calling me and saying, "Hey, we found this place." And then the pastor asked him to go out to lunch, and they were so excited because they wanted to get to know the pastor, and they wanted to find out, hey, where is it that we could dive more deeply into community? And they went out to lunch, and after a little chit-chat, the pastor looked them in the eyes and said, "You need to know if you stay together in this relationship, you are no longer welcome at this church." Matt has never been back to church except for when I officiated his mother's funeral a few years later. That's the risk of sheep without a shepherd. But Jesus saw the need. He saw the people. And he had compassion. And with guts churning, he teaches them many things. Maybe not the things that they wanted, but the things that they needed. Let's pick it back up in verse 35. "When it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, 'This is a deserted place, and the hour is now very late. Send them away so that they may go into the surrounding country and villages and buy something for themselves to eat.' But he answered them, 'You give them something to eat.' And they said to him, 'Are we to go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat?' And he said to them, 'How many loaves have you? Go and see.' And then when they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he ordered them to get all the people to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to the heaven. And he blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to his disciples to set before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all. And all ate and were filled. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish, and those who had eaten the loaves numbered 5,000 men." I mean, keep in mind, they're just counting the men. There's many more than 5,000, because there were women and children there as well. But the lesson for the disciples, what is the big picture lesson in this? Not just for the disciples, but for us, is God's economy of plenty. The disciples, they come to Jesus, stating that it's getting late, that it's time to break the party up, send people out so they can get some food. But Jesus' response is direct. I mean, there's no, like, what does he really mean? I mean, this is a direct response. "You give them something to eat." And instead of the suggested shopping trip, Jesus asks the disciples to take inventory. See what we got already. And Jesus takes the resources that the disciples found among them, 2 fish, 5 loaves of bread. He blesses it, he breaks it, and he gives it. And I love the way Mark sees God's economy, because his understanding is this: all ate and were filled. When the resources of God are entrusted to his people, and they're received with thanksgiving, and they're shared with generosity, there's enough. There is enough. It isn't about increasing a food supply. Instead, it's about taking inventory of what God has already provided, gratefully acknowledging that provision, and generously sharing what is already there. Secondly, in God's economy, what Mark really shows us is that there is more than enough to go around. They took up 12 full baskets of broken pieces and of fish. There's an overflowing of abundance. And deep down, we sort of know this to be true. When we look at the things in the world in our lives that make our guts churn, one of those things is that so many people go hungry. But we also have seen all those statistics. 20% of the world's population uses 80% of the resources. There is enough to go around if we sort of follow these instructions from Jesus. What does the feeding of the 5,000 really mean? I mean, a miracle for sure. Jesus revealing his divinity. But I think what this shows us is that God's kingdom is not only about power, but it's about overflowing love. And those two things cannot be separated. And maybe, just maybe, this story about feeding the 5,000 isn't so much about bread or the fish, but maybe it's a way of living, a way of relating. John 6:35 says this. Jesus said to them, he's speaking to a crowd at the time as well, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." Jesus is talking about a bread that endures. And throughout the Gospels, we see Jesus feeding and nourishing people through his love and his presence, his wisdom, his guidance, his teaching, his healing, his mercy, his faithfulness, his generosity, his compassion. He continues to feed and nurture people with a bread that actually feeds the soul. He speaks to their souls with his teachings, and then he turns to their physical needs. He will not let them go hungry, not spiritually or physically. Two kinds of breads, the kind of bread that feeds, nourishes, sustains, and the kind of bread that leaves you hungry, malnourished. And here's what I think it means for us. If we want life, we need to be eating the bread of life. And if we want to bring life to one another, then we need to be the bread of life. Okay, I had Marta. Bradley, are you in here? You probably know about this. I had Marta start me up. Who knows what this is? Name, yell it out if you know what this is. Starter for sourdough. This is a starter for sourdough. I have no idea how it works because I would never done anything like it, but I know it's a process. I know there's a process to it. But here's the thing about this starter for sourdough. It has the potential to become bread, to feed, and to nourish. So what if Jesus is the starter batch inside of each of us? What if Jesus is giving us the recipe so that we can be more like him, the bread of life for the world? Think about it like this. Something in us gets leavened, and then it rises, and then it becomes bread. Jesus says, give them something to eat, and maybe this is the way it works. Starts here. The story of the feeding of the multitudes, it invites us into something really big. It invites us to look around at the needs around us, to take accounting of what already is here, what's right at hand, and to gratefully acknowledge all that God has given us. And then here's the hard part. And then we share it. We share it generously with one another. I have witnessed this community over the years. We've been together years now, doing this in so many different ways. And earlier, I don't think they're here tonight, but last few days ago, I met with Sarah Bacher, who's one of our board members, and we met for a cup of coffee just to talk about faith and life and all sorts of good things. And when I was driving home, I was struck by the passion, by the commitment, by the hard work that she and Hannah have had for our Pride booth and our Pride presence on Pride weekend. And I was thinking about all the heart and soul that they put into it, all the people that walked up to that booth and maybe heard something a little different about Jesus, about the church, a place that they actually felt welcomed and seen and known and loved. And it made me realize that that's what it means to be the bread of life. That's what it means. And you know what, Andrea, I was thinking about you too, and I was thinking about our Linny and over her last year and a half, that, and this is among one of many things that many people did and one of many things that you did during that time, but I can't tell you how many times I was over at Giovanelli's, and you're coming out because you'd just done Lynn's hair and makeup for some event, because, you know, she was always going somewhere, graduation party, a party here, doing this, doing that. And I was thinking about how that helped her keep her dignity in a disease that didn't leave you with a lot of dignity. Andrea, the bread of life. Nancy and Mark, I mean, talk about behind-the-scenes ministry that they continue to do. Oh, started years ago with always being in there with our kids, Cookie Monster and his wife. But for years, you guys, and many don't even know this, do you know how many people in this community have come to them and they've spent time with them, helping them figure out what the next step is, what do they do next in their career, how do they move forward? They've used the gifts that God have given to them, and they have been the bread of life to people in this community. Bynlix, I'm watching you guys back there because I'm thinking about that time right after George Floyd and all those pop-up food tents, and I remember all you guys out there working at those things. I mean, we are a community that cares. We are a community that sees a need, that's not afraid to step into it, that gives thanks for it, sees what we got, and generously share whatever it is that we have to give. And this is a witness to God's overflowing love. Like I said, we're a church that values, that's moved to be engaged in community, to see and meet needs, to do what is just, to do what is right, to be generous. If you've been around for a while, you know that every Christmas and Easter offering goes outside our doors, the entire thing. We always pick a ministry or a partner that we see a need. This year at Easter, we are partnering with Flourish Food Market. They're a neighbor. They're literally right below here, the floor down. We've been a partner with them for a long time. And they do amazing work in this community. They're part of the Flourish Placemaking Collective. But this is a plant. Think about this, you guys. This is a plant-based food market that actually provides access to fresh and healthy food for communities who do not have access to fresh and healthy food. And it is absolutely amazing to watch people come in with dignity, embraced in love, and shop for healthy food. And it's all done here at the Center of Belonging right down here. Side note, for years, we as a community on Wednesdays, every other Wednesday, we take a shift headed up by Dan Holte. And people come and volunteer, and you get to unload trucks. You can take shifts at any time. Come on your lunch hour. You get to load up all those shelves. Now, you see an empty shelf that I'm going to talk about in a minute. And then you get to welcome people. And you get to visit with them. And you get to show them, you know, help them with anything they need. And then you get to clean up. And I will guarantee you that it's a bigger benefit for any one of us that gets to do this, because it's always such a rich, rich experience. But here's the thing. The Center of Belonging, when we started partnering with them in this, they were serving about 30 family units. Right now, they serve 70 family units. That represents more than 300 family members. So along with the need to increase the food that they have, and with summer coming up, they like to provide a lot of fresh food, food costs have gone up 11% in the last 18 months. So there is a real need here. There's a real need, and I love that we have the opportunity to partner, because here's the thing. We can, through them, see the need. We see what God has already provided, which is just absolutely amazing. And then we can generously share we can generously share so that they can continue on with this amazing ministry. So as Easter gets closer, you'll hear more and more about this, and you'll be able to go to our website. You'll be able to click on a giving tab. There'll be an option for you right around Easter time to give here. But I'm going to encourage all of us to think about this, to think about what makes your gut churn. And if it's hungry people, I'm going to encourage you to give this. I'm going to encourage you to volunteer at it. It's amazing. Because it is a beautiful opportunity for us. So Katie, you talked a lot last week about the different studies you were doing. And I thought about, because you talked about feasting on the word. And I was studying feasting on the gospels for this one. And there was a pastor, Reverend Pete Perry, who said this about this text, and it was, I thought, I'm not going to try to say this, I'm just going to quote him because it was so awesome. And here's what he had to say about this text. Because Jesus has his guts ripped out by people who are like sheep without a shepherd and has confidence that his bumbling disciples, that's us friends, have what it takes to feed them. The resources, those of the disciples, the church itself, blessed by Jesus, are enough to transform the shepherdless crowd from being strangers and lost wanderers to being like children at home. I couldn't have said it better than Pastor Perry, but here's where I'll end tonight. I think this is the message. I think this is the question maybe for us. The question of compassion. What makes your stomach hurt? What makes your gut churn? And then it's clear that Jesus gave us a command. Give them something to eat. I think it's about compassion and action. That's the life of faith. So, I love what Jesus did with those loaves and the fish. He receives them. He looks up to heaven. He blesses them, he breaks them, and he gives them. Provisions are offered, thanks is given, and bread is shared. Let me pray. Holy and gracious God, we gather together and the sun is shining on our faces, and we are reminded that you are a God of compassion, a God whose gut churns when you see the hurting and the wounded and the hungry. God, we're so grateful. We are so grateful for who you are and how you love us and how you call each of us to love one another. Thank you that you've invited us to partner with you and to bring in good news into this world. We pray it all in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Thanks, Debbie. Hi, everyone. I'm Mark. I'm a member of our table board. And as we get ready to come up for communion, I loved what Debbie said. And communion was a representation of the Last Supper Jesus had with his friends. And he ate with them, and he shared a meal. But that bread that was offered on that night was more than just a meal between friends. It was the bread of life, and he offered his disciples the opportunity to be full, not just physically, but spiritually, by believing in him and being with him forever. And he offers you the same thing. So as we get ready to come up, think about Debbie's message, what makes your stomach churn, and where you feel that hunger, that deep hunger, to do more and be more for your neighbors. So on the night of the Last Supper, Jesus took the bread, he broke it, he said, "This is my body, broken for you." And then he took the cup, and he offered it to them, and he said, "This is my blood, shed for you." Here at the table, we invite everyone who would like to come participate in communion, and there'll be servers up front, and you can take a piece of the bread and dip it into the cup, and it's all gluten-free, and the music will play, and we just invite you to take part in that if you so choose, and if not, just to remain in your seat and listen to Christian and the band. Oh, you please stand for the Lord's Prayer? Thank you. Our God, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Hey, a couple things before I give the benediction. Maggie did such a great job on all those announcements, and I am just going to reiterate women at the table this Wednesday, but even more so, because we are getting men at the table started. All you men, watch out for me tonight, because I will be coming after you to say, get to men at the table. We really are excited about starting that up. It's going to be a Jovanellis who always open their home. So I'm in the process of putting together kind of a lead team. You might want to run if you see me right after the service, but hey, I'm after you with love in my heart and love for this community.
Don't run, she'll get you no matter what.
But so next Sunday back at Bethlehem Lutheran for Palm Sunday, then we're at Good Friday back here, and then Easter Sunday. So with that, please put your hands out for the benediction. No matter who you, no, how does it start again?
Who you are.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's been a long night. No, I'm sorry. I can't. No matter who you are or what you've done, no matter who you love or what you've lost, no matter where you've been or the places that you've stayed, you always have a place at the table because you are a beloved child of God, and beloved, you belong.